I don't really care if haters really don't agree though. Kill us in the streets and they weaponize police, claiming they ain't got no beef or steady, only eating keto. But we bout to change that today. Your clans with guns and badges, they won't be safe. Your pipes that poison lands, no, they won't be safe. It's time to fight with us or get backed away. Because revolution steady right on the itinerary. I'm sick of seeing all my people in obituaries. Stay mad, Karen, we don't give an F-bomb. Blow it up by any means necessary. Captain said that I could be a revolutionary. I believe it, I could feel it in my capillaries. We out here and we showing no fear. Revolution's coming near, you don't want us as an adversary.
Fight the power!
Fight the power!
This is how the revolution sounds. And you know we say fight the power.
Fight the power.
This is how the revolution sounds.
Riches on the earth got so many needs. I'm a giant, so they looking like my mini-me's. Never been a killer, but the world is tempting me. Steady killing me, but would never put an end to me. Fight the power, so in public, I'm the enemy. Privately contending with intentions of my energy. System all cap, feel like Kaepernick when he in the league. Overcoming haters like John Taylor, we in the lead. I deserve this gold medal. It's from the soil where we once settled. They wanna spoil everyone's ghetto. My future son is about to know the level of expectation to be a black man in this generation. Cause this time, oh, the revolution will be televised. Bringing the evolution of mankind. When you hear me speak, you can tell I'm wise. Truth set us free, that's why they tell us lies. Questioning everything I recognize.
Fight the power!
Fight the power!
This is how the revolution sounds. And you know we say fight the power!
Fight the power!
This is how the revolution sounds. And you know we say,
you can murder a liberator, but you can't murder liberation. You can murder revolutionary, but you can't murder revolution. And you can murder a freedom fighter, but you can't murder freedom.
Revolution's coming, yes it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, coming, coming.
All right, views from the ground.
Views from the damn ground.
Views from the ground.
Views from the damn ground.
Views from the ground.
Views from the damn ground.
And that's on that, on that, on that. We are live here on KFAI, WFNU, Frogtown Radio. This is everyone's favorite agender host, DJ Love. And we are in pledge drive. So if anyone feels moves to support the station, please call 612-375-9030. And we're going to jump right into the program right now. And we're going to hand it off to Nick. So,
hey, thanks for having us on. So today, again, thanks for the platform. And hey, donate to KFAI. This is a great platform. Many, many people get a platform here specifically on Views from the Ground that may not have an opportunity to do so otherwise. It's a great cause. Thanks again for having us on, DJ. Today, I've got the pleasure of introducing the audience to Adrian Riley, a person who I started communicating with back in November of last year about his 30 years and counting, almost 31 years of wrongful incarceration for crimes he did not commit. Today we are joined in the studio by his mother Mary and his auntie Diane, and Adrian is also on the phone calling us from Moose Lake Correctional Facility. Adrian, are you with us?
Yes, sir. What's up, old Nick? How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, my friend?
Man, I'm hanging in there doing the best I can, man.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot to get into here, but, you know, I think the bottom line that I want to say is that I've spent a lot of time talking to Adrian and his mother and others in his life, and I just... It's very clear once you start digging into the case that Adrian had really nothing to do with this, you know, other than that he did know the people in this case that were murdered in this incident. But, you know, once you get to know Adrian and you start to really look into the details, it's very clear that he had nothing to do with this. And, you know, basically, what we're on here to do is just kind of let Adrian kind of introduce himself. We're going to talk a little bit about sort of the circumstances that led him to be where he is today. And then we are also excited to announce that Adrian has a clemency hearing after 30 years of incarceration. He's been fighting for his freedom for over 30 years and has a clemency hearing in front of the Clemency Review Committee next Friday, April 3rd at 9:30 a.m. Can learn more about that at freeadrianriley.com. Will be something that the public is welcome to come. We would love to have supporters come out in person to that event, but also if you can't make it, you can live stream it on the website as well and on YouTube. So Adrian, you know, bottom line, like you're probably way better at telling your story than I am. So, you know, tell us a little bit about, you know, what you want to tell us.
Well, I want to tell you, man, about my case, a little bit about my case. I was convicted on April 10th, 1996, for a triple homicide in Watertown, Minnesota, a triple murder that I did not commit. I ended up setting up a drug deal, and because of what I did, three people were killed because of my actions. And, I went to trial and was found guilty of these crimes. And basically, man, I didn't do it. And I fought it. I remained silent. I didn't take the stand. I was scared feared for my life, man, for what happened. I wasn't there when the crimes took place per se themselves. But after the fact, I was told what happened, and I did not cooperate with the police when they caught up with me, you know. And I became a suspect in this case on one of the deceased in the pocketbook of one of the deceased was an address book, and it said my nickname. It said Dre and cocaine. And so the detectives used that right there and made me a person of interest. So they ended up calling one of the victim's sisters, and they asked them, did they know this guy named Dre that deals cocaine? And so she was like, yeah, oh my God, and I know him, and he sells me cocaine, and I've seen him with guns, and yada, yada, yada. And so at that point right there, I became a prime suspect. And so once the police eventually did catch up to me, I told them I didn't know anything. I told them I didn't know the people. I didn't know nothing. And so that led me to here, basically.
Right.
Because the first rule of thumb, if you lie about something, then that means you got something to hide. And so I went to trial and was found guilty. My trial attorney was Keith Ellison, the current Minnesota Attorney General. And one of the homicide detectives on the case was the current Minnesota Commissioner of Corrections, Paul Snell. And so now it's like they knew that I was hiding something, obviously, but since I didn't cooperate, man, there was basically nothing that my trial attorney, Keith Ellison, could do. And so here I sit, 30 years, 10 months later.
So I think it's really important that we let everybody know, for somebody who is not well-versed in the, I guess, the street life that you were living in the mid-90s there, can you explain a little bit about the conservative vice lords and specifically your mentor, Ed Harris, and what had happened prior to your conviction that, you know, led you to not be willing to cooperate? I think that's something that everybody should know.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I became a conservative vice lord at the age of 13 in South Minneapolis. and Edward Harris, or Big Ed, or Big E, as everyone called him, he was the one that brought me in. And so in 1992, with the Jerry Hoff, the Minneapolis police officer that was killed, Jerry Hoff, it was allegedly the meeting happened at his house for the guys that ended up assassinating Officer Hoff. And so Ed Harris was picked up. He was picked up by the police afterwards because someone gave him up, said that they had this meeting and et cetera at his house. And so once they picked him up in the whole entire neighborhood, they knew that Ed was picked up. And so basically all of the streets knew that he was picked up. And so after the police picked him up and questioned him, they released him. And so at that moment, the census was that Ed was a snitch. And so Ed was tricked and eventually was tricked into an alley and shot in the back of his head by fellow Vice Lord members for just the assumption of being a snitch. So that was how I was brought up. I was brought up around that. I was brought up in that environment. And so when my case happened 3 years later in 1995, that happened with Ed Harris in 92. So when my case happened, that was the indoctrination that was embedded in me. If you snitch, then you take the chance or the risk of being killed,
right,
or your family being harmed. And so I was scared, man. So I refused to say anything.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think in your shoes, if I were in your shoes, I think I would have done the same thing. And I think this is a good time to bring Mary in. And Mary, I'm looking back at notes from one of the first times we talked, and you know, you mentioned, I think I asked you, did anybody threaten you, or were you in fear for your life or your safety at all around this when Adrian was convicted? And you had mentioned that somebody did come and threaten you at your home at one point. Is that
correct?
Yeah. So, you know, they've already by this point taken Adrian's freedom away. He's already being held in you know, a county jail at this point, pending trial. Somebody literally shows up at his mother's house, bangs on the door, says, if your son snitches, that's it. You know, you better tell him not to snitch. You know what happens to snitches. That right there is enough for anybody to go, okay, well, I'm in jail. Maybe they can't physically get to me, but if somebody can get to my mother and they're threatening my mother and I have no physical ability to help protect her, that's enough reason for me to keep my mouth shut. So, yeah. So obviously good reasons not to cooperate, in my opinion.
Yeah, it happens, man. You know, that's just a part of the street life, man. You dig what I'm saying? So you make a choice, man. You make a cognitive decision, man, when you're out there, you know what I mean, in those streets, man, doing what you're doing. So we know what comes along with everything that happens, but it's just unfortunate, man, that, you know, that the state of portray or put on a case, man, that really wasn't the case. It wasn't factual at all. It's like the county attorney, man, it's just like they just summed up a theory and ran with it and pitched it to a jury. And it was already racial. I hate to use the racial aspect of anything, but my entire case was based upon race and identity, a mistaken identity. One of the key factors in the case was a lady said, I won't use the lady's name, but you can read it in the trial script and the case number, like my first appellate case number with the Minnesota Supreme Court, case number CA.
You have 1 minute remaining.
Minnesota Supreme Court case number CA-96-1394. It tells you in there in the narrative about a witness said a black man pulled her over in the town of Orinor, I think. That's like by Minnetonka out that way, and asked for directions and back to the city in a blue Beretta. And so the day that was in question when all of this happened, the car that I drove out there in and when I went back to Minneapolis was in a red Ford F-150 that I rented from someone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they took that and ran with it. You know what I mean? They took all of these little snippets and et cetera and ran with it and pitched it to a jury. And so it was wrong. It was totally wrong. But they figured that someone had to take the blame. Someone had to calm the family and the community. Someone had to take the blame.
Yeah, a triple homicide in a small town, you know, raises some alarms.
Thank you for using GTL.
There's the end of our phone call. Adrian is going to call me back in just a second here. But, yeah, so, you know, rural Carver County in the 90s, where Adrian mentioned the racial thing, you know, he said throughout the voir dire process, he did not see a person of color even interviewed to be a potential juror. That's going to sway things. I mean, that's going to sway things today. It's definitely going to sway things in the middle of, like, a crack epidemic in the 90s. But
yes,
I'll be right back.
And, So can you tell us, because, you know, Adrian has been locked up since 1995.
Correct.
And just tell us, how has that impacted your family?
Oh, that have impacted me very, very extremely hard. I kind of, like, struggle a little bit about my son being away from home. But... like Nick was saying about...
at the Minnesota Department of Corrections.
About Adrian. I would like to introduce myself. Good evening. My name is Mary Riley. I am Adrian Riley's mom. And my son, like he said, he has been incarcerated for 30 years for a crime that he did not commit. Throughout his time in prison, Adrian has... educated himself. He have got his GED. He's taking college course, and he also have tutor other people, and he's also a GED tutor. But my son, before he got locked up, my son had a learning disability called dyslexia, and Adrian showed resilience and strength, and he has struggled a little bit, but he picked himself up and educated himself because he knew what he needed to do. He knew what he was up against. And so every time my son tried to reach out to the court about his case, he always got denied from them taking a second or third look at his case. He always have got denied from it. So I'm here and urging you all to please listen to my plea. Listen to Adrian's plea. We are asking everyone to please help to support my son. My son's need support from the community. He needs anybody, everyone to come out and show some support on April the 3rd at 9:30 a.m. So, his cases, I have written all the cases in the case file number. I wrote them down. And if you would like to read about Adrian and read about his cases, one of the case is 10-K8-95-000827. The other one is C8-96-1394. The other one is A10-0587. The other one is A111-1809. And the last one is A24-1702. And you can look these cases up, and you can see what really happened. And also, Adrian had explained to you about what happened on this case. And at the particular time when Adrian caught this case, I was not allowed in the courtroom. They kept me out of the courtroom, and I asked why. They told me that I could not come in the courtroom because I might be used to testify. And I asked them why, to testify about what? I wasn't present. I was in the hospital, had just got stabbed by my ex-husband. I had got stabbed 7 times. And even when they wanted me to come to the grand jury to recite about Adrian, and I told them that Adrian, the day that they said that these people were supposed to be executed, I told them that Adrian was there at the hospital with me that morning, and I told them that all they had to do is just ask the nurse, because my room was right in front of the nurse's station. And so they can tell them that Adrian was there at the hospital. And I'm like, how can he be in two places at the same time? But I guess they wanted to close the case and have closure for the family. So,
yeah,
this is what happened. And so I am asking and begging and pleading to everyone, it's time for my son to come home. My son has been in there for 30 years. He is the only immediately family I have. And I just had brain surgery for 9 hours. My son has accumulated diabetes stage 2 since he's been in there. They've been rejecting him for his treatment, his medication, and they playing a lot of games with him up in there. And I am very scared and afraid that if my son don't come out of there, my son will do like the judge told him. He hope by time he get out of prison, he hope he meet his victims. So this is my story that I wanted to share with everybody. And I appreciate Nick and DJ for allowing me to come out and recite this and tell about my son. So please, please help him to come home. It's time. It's way overdue for him to come home. Thank you.
Yeah. One thing that I want to just call out that I think is kind of absurd. I've never seen this written. I've read literally every page of every document that exists regarding this case, and I've never seen a judge write the words substantially circumstantial to describe the evidence in an appeal. So Adrian's appeal was denied, yet the judge wrote, and you can read this in one of the cases Mary cited, substantially, it's also on freeadrianriley.com, substantially circumstantial. That shouldn't be good enough. We shouldn't accept that. It makes me absolutely sick that Mary and Adrian, Mary brought her family to Minnesota from Mississippi seeking better opportunities, and this isn't the state that I thought I lived in when I was growing up. It's really amazing to me how racist a state can be while pretending it's not. And in a lot of ways, I think it's almost better to just fly the Confederate flag if you're going to be a racist, and at least everybody can see from a distance. But anyway, end rant. Adrian, you back with us on here?
Yes, sir.
So, yeah, I mean, anything else you want to add or...
Well, I'd answer any questions that y'all might have, you know, but as far as me, man, I'm just, you know, I'm here, I'm dealing with this stuff. It's the best way I can deal with it, man. You know, I've come a long way, man, from just being a dyslexic, from a learning disability, I'll say, from being dyslexic to now, you know what I mean? So now I understand, you know, like a lot of those cases that she was quoting and stating. It's like in Minnesota, they have a time bar exception. Now, even if you're right, they have, it's called State versus NAFLA. That's the citation of the case. So you have 2 years you know, upon any type of conviction that you may have. If you get convicted and you don't appeal your case in 2 years, you can, someone can just come out and just say, hey, I did it, or hey, this is that. You got 2 years. If you can't come up with nothing within that 2 year time frame, man, you're screwed. And
yeah.
So, like a couple of those cases, man, that's what they cited in those cases. And I was just, at that time, I was just said, wow, man, it wasn't nothing I really could do about it.
It's you know, working with both you, Adrian, and then also with Mahdi Ali, freemahdiali.com. You know, working with both of you, I'm shocked by the similarities between the cases, and I'm shocked by the fact that there are documents out there. There are, you know, in Mahdi's case, there's recanted testimony. In your case, there's stuff like substantially circumstantial and things like that. Like, every sign can point to this person is innocent. We got the wrong person, but it still can take you literally decades to try to get out of there. And
for sure, know,
it's I you inspire me in a lot of ways because you've been fighting a very challenging fight, and with obviously the support of your mother. I mean, you two are people that I look to as like, this is what family's all about. And I'm amazed by how strong you two are and how strong you seem to both be each other's rock in a way that, you know, I can't imagine having this separation for this long and maintaining this strong of a relationship. And just, I'm just so impressed by, you know, how you two have just like supported each other through all this. So.
Oh yeah.
And I would like to also add also to my story about my son of his freedom. My son have other family members in different state, and he needs to get to go and be with his other family member and get to know his other side of the family, like his dad, and I'm his second mom, and his other siblings, his two sisters, and they just want to, and his grandmom.
Yeah, grandma, yeah.
Yeah, his grandmom and his grandpa. And he, you know, he needs to get out to go and hang out with them and get to know them, you know, before they, well, with what's going on in this world today, we don't know. where tomorrow, what may happen, but he just need his freedom so he can go and explore and share himself with his other side of the family. And they are really supporting Adrian, and they really love Adrian, and they want Adrian to get out so he can come and participate and be part of their family. And I would love that also for my son to go and get to know his other side of the family. So once again, I am asking you to please to come out on April the 3rd at 9:30 a.m. on a Friday and help to support Adrian, because he really needs the support and someone to believe in him. Because he's been fighting this fight a long time, and he needs your support.
So I'll just provide, this is on the website, freeadrianriley.com, but I also, DJ kindly pointed out, we should probably announce where this is at. So this is at, the hearing will be in the Afton room. It says use west entrance, so you'd park in the west parking lot. The address is 1450 Energy Park Drive, St. Paul, Minnesota, 55108. Adrian's hearing will go from approximately 9:30 to 9:45 a.m. If you are attending in person, they do want everybody there by about 9:15 a.m. If you can't attend in person, it will be streamed on YouTube, and you can find that link at freeadrianriley.com.
And my last question here, before we wrap up, is this your first Clemencing hearing?
Yes, it is.
Yep. So, and yeah, I just think it's very important, as folks are saying, to support our community. Right? There's a lot of different ways we can support the community, and you know, having someone that is being falsely imprisoned for over 30 years, This is what we should do. So April 3rd, once again, Friday, April 3rd at 9:30 a.m. So.
Thanks.
Yeah, man, I appreciate everybody, man. I definitely thank everybody, man, 100%.
Okay, this is not his auntie. I'm his cousin. And my name is Diane Reeves. And what I want to say is that Adrian is a good person. I have went to see him maybe once or twice. And he's a good person, and it's time for him to come home. In a couple of days, he'll be 50 years old. You know, that's a golden year. And guess what else? His mother's birthday tomorrow. Is on May 3rd. Oh, tomorrow's your birthday?
Yeah, tomorrow. Happy birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, yep.
Well, tomorrow. And his mother's birthday is May 3rd. So everybody just come on out April the 3rd so we can hear this clemency and they free him. That'll be the best birthday present his mother can get.
Yep. We're going to try to feed everybody that comes out afterwards. Location to be announced on that. But if you show up to support Adrian, we're going to at least at a minimum try to feed you lunch. So more details on that later. But anyway, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Adrian, for calling in. We really appreciate it. And also
man,
for your family.
Appreciate the platform.
You have 1 minute remaining.
Thank you all.
All right. Thanks.
You.
All right. Sounds good.
Love you, baby.
With that, coming up next, we're going to have 15 minutes with Nico G. So take it away, Nico.
Welcome, welcome, everyone. Welcome to another edition of 15 with Nico G. My name is Nico Georgiadis. I'm an independent journalist, filmmaker, and co-founder of Unicorn Riot. You can find my work at nicog.work and unicornriot.ninja. Thanks again, DJ, and thanks to the amazing listeners here at KFAI. I'm here for 15 minutes during every month's third Wednesday, examining and connecting views from the ground locally and internationally. Tonight, we're staying local. With batches of court appearances happening tomorrow and next week, I want to stay around here to chat about the federal government indicting more than 36 people for protesting an ICE field director in January. I know it's been a topic of this show and even my segment last month, but it's such a historic case it deserves more time. For brief context, back in January, at the height of anti-ICE protests across the metro, and 2 days before Alex Pretty was fatally shot by federal agents, a few dozen people showed up at City's Church to protest David Easterwood, who's an ICE field director and also a pastor in the church. Now, the Trump admin has leveraged 2 federal civil rights felonies against 4 members of the press, 3 U.S. veterans, a civil rights attorney, 2 co-founders of Black Lives Matter Minnesota, a school board member, and 28 other community-oriented individuals in connection with that protest. If I would be naming each one of them and what they do, we would be sitting here for a minute. So I'm not going to do that. Over the span of roughly 6 weeks, 39 people were then arrested across 7 states in connection with the protest at the Southern Baptist City's Church, which is a denomination rooted in the pro-slavery foundations of America. All 39 have now been indicted on the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act, so the FACE Act. Written in the description for the FACE Act, which was a Clinton-era act created to help protect abortion clinics. What's noted in the description for the indictment on all 39 people is that they were there to injure, intimidate, and interfere with the exercise of rights of religious freedom at a place of worship. So that was their first federal felony. Their other federal felony under the KKK Act was conspiracy against the right of freedom at a place of worship. So both charges are actually very familiar to the president. Trump himself was indicted on the KKK Act for his efforts to overturn the 2020 election, and that was one of 91 felonies he faced before they were all dropped after he was allowed to become the president again. As for the FACE Act, 3 days after taking office, Trump's admin pardoned 23 people convicted under the FACE Act, and his DOJ noted in an official memorandum that the act had been politically weaponized against pro-life protesters. And very interesting, right? So defense attorneys for what some are calling now the Righteous 39, they claim that the Trump admin is now targeting its political opponents with this indictment. So essentially, the Trump admin has re-weaponized the FACE Act to go after his political opponents. Trump's Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, a Christian white nationalist who grew up in Forest Lake, a suburb of St. Paul that's really just 20 minutes from City's Church in St. Paul, and he attends Christ Church, D.C., this church was co-founded by Joe Rigney, a far-right Christian writer who actually wrote an opinion piece published by right-wing Christian World magazine a day after the protest. And Rigney's writing seemed a little extreme if you actually read his article and his opinion. He essentially invoked biblical scriptures, demanded prosecutions, and called on the government to, quote, be a terror to evil conduct, and that they bear the sword righteously and purposefully, carrying out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. And the government's case against the church protest was actually initially so weak that judges continued to reject it, not once, but repeatedly. Prosecutors were then forced to take the extraordinary step of bypassing the courts entirely and going directly to a grand jury made up of greater Minnesotans, not Minnesotans in the metro area, but greater Minnesotans, to get what they couldn't get from a judge, and they got an indictment. The case has been prosecuted by the DC Civil Rights Office, not the local one, the DC one, with multiple waves of warrants and grand jury indictments. If you want to read more on the case, there's a new post about it at unicornriot.ninja. We have three articles spotlighting the three waves of arrests and warrants. Tonight, we're going to hear from three of the defendants in this case. Activists and co-organizers of the protest, Monique Cullors-Doty and Nkema Levy-Armstrong, and school teacher Drew Edwards. Monique and Drew spoke after they were released from federal custody on February 27th. Nkema had already gone to jail and been released, but she spoke at the rally as well. Take a listen.
So Minnesota, we hold the line. Keep holding the line. Keep standing up against ICE and stand for your immigrant neighbors. We will not cow down to intimidation tactics, to gaslighting, and outright lies.
That's right.
We stand on truth, and what happened is the light of our truth collided with the deception that was happening in that church. Because one thing we do know is that Jesus is love. And if you don't treat your neighbors in love, then you are not worshiping the true Jesus. And if you can't look at your immigrant neighbors and believe that their humanity has values, then you cannot call yourself a Christian.
So why isn't the media looking into David Easterwood? Why aren't they looking into the theology behind City's Church? Which from our understanding, there's also a branch in Washington, D.C. that Pete Hegseth attends, right? So there is a connection when we are talking about white Christian nationalism. Why aren't we paying attention to that, right? Not just what may be happening at City's Church, but in churches around the country, right, that are rubber stamping the behavior of the Trump administration. Where's the clergy that got behind Donald Trump and his administration, saying that he was going to do this and he was going to do that and that he cares about the gospel? Where are you when it comes to his name appearing thousands of times in the Epstein files?
Amen.
How many clergy have we seen calling out Donald Trump, calling out his comrades and associates, calling out the billionaires that they are protecting who allegedly engaged in some of the most heinous crimes that you can imagine?
So today we stand here proud. Proud for people who took a stand against white nationalism.
That's right.
People who took a stand against the history of the use of Christianity to demonize people of color.
That's right.
To take a stand against how this country has been structured on white supremacy.
That's right.
This country has been overrun with racism. This country has been overrun with hatred. This country has been overrun with fascism.
That's right.
And we say no more.
No more.
I want to point out that the reason that ICE was able to come here and do what they have been able to do is because they stand on the platform of police brutality and violence. Had law enforcement been held accountable for the murder of black women, black men, brown women, brown men, indigenous people, people of color, and even, yes, white Americans, they wouldn't feel so free to come and do what they've been doing and run roughshod over our communities here. And let me be clear, this was done with the support of local law enforcement. It doesn't matter what the mayors have said. People have seen it in the street. They've come to the aid of ICE agents repeatedly.
And Governor Walz did nothing about it.
Nothing. Not only did Governor Walz do nothing about that, but Governor Walz, you had the nerve to make a statement about the protest at the church. At the city's church. You didn't agree. Well, guess what? If you knew how to debate and you hadn't lied about your military experience, we might not be in this situation in the first place.
So up next, I have Andrew Edwards, who wants to say a few words.
He has pants on.
He got pants on now. They arrested him in his underwear, and he had to come to court in his underwear. So that was a very interesting situation. I don't know why the brother couldn't get pants on before he came out.
And they kicked open his door. All right, Drew.
Yeah, I ain't going to say too much.
Love you, Drew.
We got 5 o'clock. I woke up and heard some. I stay north side, but I heard some things outside of my window. So I approached the window, and I seen the officer's gun. Whoa. And the brother told me, go to the door. And so I approached the door, and the brother kicked the door open and broke down the door.
Shame.
And so
shame.
I'm a teacher. I should be working with my babies right now. The day was missed with my educator. There's less than 225 male educators in all of Minnesota.
Black male, talk about
black male educators. And that is what I have the honor and privilege of doing. And when they removed me from the house, the brother started to grope me and grab me, and I had no drawers on, and he took me outside, and the brother started to pull out his taser like he was about to tase me, and I told him, man, you think I'm supposed to be scared all that? And he started to harass me, and that's why I said all I needed was pants, and then he tried to shove me in the truck, and that's how I ended up here, and that's why for most of the time I was in a cell the whole time, because they didn't like our temperament. So my whole thing is, you know, I just want to let people know I appreciate y'all's solidarity. I appreciate everybody out here. This is the time for action.
The dreams I dreamed went up in smoke.
Yeah. It was, again, 3 of the co-defendants of the 39 people who are indicted for protesting ICE field director David Easterwood out at City's Church, where he's a pastor at. So you heard that was Monique Cullors Doty, Nakima Levy Armstrong, and Drew Edwards. You can find more at unicornriot.ninja about that story. And before I'm done, I'd like to take a quick minute to bring to focus one of the deadliest civilian attacks that the U.S. military has committed in its history, and one that just occurred only 3 weeks ago. So switching gears over to one of the first days of the U.S. and Israeli war on Iran, when U.S. missiles rained down an Iranian elementary school, they killed 168 people. Over 100 of them were children, and many of the others were teachers and parents. There's been new investigations that prove U.S. involvement, U.S. missiles, and Amnesty International has a new breakdown of the deadly strike and is demanding accountability. On the same day of the attack, there was an emergency protest on the south side of Minneapolis, and Sarah Martin from Women Against Military Madness spoke about the attack. And this is what she had to say on the day of the attack.
This morning around time, the U.S. and Israeli forces attacked multiple cities in Tehran, bombing residential neighborhoods and schools, and killing civilians, including 108 schoolgirls in an elementary school in the city of Manav. And at least 2 students in a school in the eastern part of Tehran. It is still unclear what the actual number of people have been martyred and injured is. The elementary school has 170 students enrolled in this morning session. So they're most likely, as we're getting, as we come to here over the last 3 years, likely a lot more students, staff, and parents who are still under the rubble. Shame! Yeah. These shameful attacks happened right in the middle of the U.S.-Iran negotiations. While the Iranian foreign minister and his Jordanian counterpart announced that the negotiations were going well, Trump ordered the military attack without any reason, calling it, as usual, a preemptive attack. When the attack began, I got a message from my niece, who is the head of a trauma center in a hospital in downtown Tehran. They attacked. The bastards just attacked. She was giving CPR to a patient when she heard the explosions. Earlier yesterday, my niece had told me that she was tired, that this is really sad.
Yeah.
That she does not want to live if Iran becomes like Iraq or Syria. Yeah. We're not going to let that happen, are we?
That was, again, on February 28th, just hours after the attack on the Iranian school by the U.S. military. In just 19 days of the Israeli and U.S. war on Iran, at least 1,444 people in Iran are dead. 17 are dead in Israel. 21 have been killed in the Gulf states. And at least 13 U.S. soldiers have been killed. Additionally, we're nearing 1,000 dead in Lebanon and over 1 million displaced as Israeli forces take more land, expanding their colonial outposts. Well, unfortunately, with that, my time has run out. Thanks again, DJ, for the space. You can follow my work at nicog.work and unicornride.ninja. Try to take care of your loved ones. Tell your loved ones you love them. And back to you, DJ.
Does your car drive more stress than miles? If your vehicle costs you more time and money than it's worth, consider donating it to KFAI. Not only will you avoid the hassles of repairs and selling, but you'll also be making a meaningful contribution to KFAI. The process is simple and free, and your generous donation is tax deductible. Just call 855-277-2346 or donate online at kfai.careasy.org.
Hey neighbor, West Bank staple and one of the few existing small stages in the area, Acadia Cafe, is asking for community support. On April 1st and 2nd, starting at 8 p.m., join us for music, drink, and song to keep Acadia Cafe going strong. AcadiaCafe.com for more details.
Welcome back to Views from the Ground, Views from the Damn Ground, here on KFAI and WFNU Frogtown Radio. Today it is pledge drive, so please call and support your local radio show. Once again, this is 612-375-9030. If anyone wants to donate, we do shows like this every single week on Views from the Ground, Views from the Damn Ground, where we just focus on Black and Indigenous liberation and local Black and Brown art. So, with that, we're going to play a little music. We're going to start it off with Michael Jackson, you know, talking about a Liberian girl he might know.
Thank you.
in a scene, and she says, do you love me? And he says so honestly, I love you, Liberian girl.
Coming up next, Mo Ken Steph. He's mine.
Yeah.
Coming up next, we have someone from America's Got Talent, Wynn Stark, with I Drove All Night.
Is that all right?